For some reason, you're listening to MGO Podcast 6.4. We don't know why we recorded it, and we definitely don't know why you're listening to it. So, what is wrong with you? I mean, do you have deep-seated emotional problems that you can only address with this podcast? Because if so, you owe us some money. We accomplished one thing on Saturday as a community, as a program, and as an organization. We made every journalist painfully jealous of the fact that you guys work for MGO Blog.
Outrageously jelly in the press box.
And they don't. So I said that you guys could leave, and then you left.
Yes, we did.
So there was one good thing for us. But I really, why did we come here? Like, it's a habit, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I just kind of woke up and drove here. I think it was entirely instinct.
I didn't even think about it. But now we're here for some reason.
And we're speaking into these microphones. I guess we're supposed to be informative.
Wow.
I mean, is that the watershed moment right there? Is that the beginning of the end?
Yeah, I think
the continuation of the beginning of the end.
I think that's the end.
Yeah.
I mean, a second consecutive game against a Power 5 school where you don't score an offensive touchdown or even come close.
Seven trips inside the opponent territory, no trips into the red zone, 3 points.
And
you kind of have to try to do that.
And they outgained Utah. So they've managed to get blown out by 3 scores in consecutive games against Power 5 opponents and still outgain the opposition. So good for the defense, but just a complete clown show. I mean, I don't want to like have to bring out the sports talk radio hot takes, but they are appropriate. Like anyone calling into a radio station this week who's mad and says that Brady Hoke is completely incompetent and this is a clown show, I agree with them.
Yeah, it's tough to argue.
I mean, first of all,
what is happening?
The punt return, which for one, you're getting burned because you're running this completely outdated, archaic NFL-style punt, and then you don't even put 11 guys on the field.
No, we had 10. It might not have mattered considering how the gunners were down there.
It might not have mattered. Like, it was going to be 20 yards at least anyway. And then the one guy who's missing is just like, eh. And that's it. That was the game right there.
I mean, as soon as he brought that back.
Except for Willie Henry.
That was beautiful.
But that was basically it. And then they're down 16 points with 10 minutes left in the game.
And it feels beyond hopeless. Well,
it does feel beyond hopeless, but this is still technically a 2-score game.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's more like 2 3-quarter score game, given the way 2-point conversions work. But it's technically a 2-score game. They've got 10 minutes left, and they're fucking huddling.
I was waiting for you to drop the first F-bomb in this podcast, and that was kind of when I expected it to come.
I mean, how idiotic do you have to be to huddle? And then even when they're not huddling, Shane Morris is looking at the sideline, and they're getting off the snap with 8 seconds left on the play clock, with the play clock running. I mean, if there's any question that the tempo issues that Michigan has are solely because of their head coach, that has to be gone.
Yeah, I mean, and especially since they showed, you know, they've now hurried up and scrambled for 4th and 1s and converted them very quickly.
I mean, that's like their one tempo trick.
It's
like, we figured it out. We figured out the tempo.
It's like when Borges ran the fake bubble once and it was...
No, he rode the fake bubble all the time.
Yeah, he did. But the first time he brought it out,
it worked relatively better. I mean, so I guess the worst thing is like, I don't care that much. Like, my biggest problem now is that I have to write about this game.
Yeah, I got home and it was just like, okay.
Like, I drank last night, but it was like perfunctory.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like I had to drink. I was just like, well, I guess I'm going to drink some alcohol now.
Once I got out of the press box, I didn't feel any need to drink whatsoever. I just kind of took it easy. I was like, now that I don't need emergency rations, we're good here.
I mean, it was just because, like, you know, before it's like, oh, ruined my weekend. I'm snippy to everybody. And now I'm just like, eh.
Because you'd have to be crazy at this point to let it affect your mood during the week because you'd just never be.
Yeah.
You could be around any of us if we took it
It's just completely
like we used to take it.
It's completely bizarre. You know, it's basketball and football have now switched places.
Yep.
Because, like, you know, during that Big Ten championship game against Michigan State, where every Michigan big picks up two fouls in like the first 3 seconds of the game.
I'm like flat on the floor at points during that game.
I'm like raving at the referees. I'm just screaming things that, if repeated, would probably get me arrested outside of my home. Yeah, so it's still there.
Yeah, the passion is just
it
shifted.
Just you just have to give me something to give a shit about.
And yeah.
This Michigan football has spectacularly failed at that. And I feel bad because, like, I said that things were going to be okay because it looked like things were going to be okay. And maybe that's just because I expect
competence.
Yeah, that. And, like, also, if you're making a prediction, it's usually a good idea to predict something that is not the extreme outlier.
Yeah.
So I usually tend to be like, oh, I think these things will work out.
You were kind of prescient about the punt return thing eventually. In this game specifically.
Well, yeah. But I told people that it was going to be all right. It is not going to be all right. Get to the boat. Get off the shore. Get to the island. The zombies are coming. Nothing is going to be all right. Except that it's the Big Ten, so maybe they will out Big Ten us.
Well, we'll get a stiff test of that this weekend.
The first game. Hey, Minnesota won a game with 7 passing yards. So that means that they could beat us for some reason. I don't know. Because it'll be...
They're a football team, so it'll means that they could
it'll
beat
be
us.
It'll be a game that ends 6-4. Yeah. So it doesn't bother me. I mean, it bothers me. But mostly because I don't know what to do for the rest of the season. Like, what is the point?
Yeah, glad I'm on the basketball beat.
Yeah. I think the Otter of Ennui is going to come out this week, which is – I don't think that's actually the earliest it's ever happened. Because I think it came out when Troy Wolfolk did terrible things to himself in the preseason.
Yeah.
And that was accurate. That was actually that was a good Ennui deployment. But I think it's Ennui time. Before the Big Ten season
even
happens.
Not now, then when?
Because I just don't. It's like, all right, well, what the hell is the point of the rest of the year? So we should talk, I guess, firing stuff. Because what scenarios do you have that Brady Hoke does not get fired?
Winning all of the games from this point forward.
So if he goes,
seems pretty unlikely. He could drop it to Michigan State. I think he's got to beat one of Michigan State or Ohio State to keep his job.
So. 9-3 still does it. I mean, possible.
Because that would constitute a turnaround. I think it also have to be accompanied by some actual signs of life from the offense. But you're also going to need that to beat either of those teams.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't know. With the,
so you think 8-4 is now completely untenable?
Just with the losses that he's going to have saddled on him from those games.
Well, I mean, with 2 humiliations, and yeah. I mean, I guess if you have really tight competitive games with Michigan State, don't laugh.
I'll do my best.
Yeah.
Then maybe. Yeah. I guess he could get away with 8-4 if it's like that. But it just seems. I mean, first of all, I don't even know if they're going to be able to fill the Big House next weekend. They're getting dangerously close to not being able to do it at all right now. The 103,000 whatever attendance
complete
figure.
Fiction.
Just a complete lie.
I mean, there were 3 or 4. Good sized sections of above like
above the students that the, were the sections that are not empty. The students that are above the student section are just not occupied at this point.
And
there were patches other places in the stadium.
And the thing is like, you know, I'm in the stadium, so I know when it's packed because it's
because elbow
time.
Room. Yeah. Yeah.
It was very roomy.
Yeah.
And it's been very roomy all year. So not only are those sections completely empty, but there are big swaths of people who are not attending.
And just scatterings of
but
people
it
everywhere.
It looks full because Michigan Stadium can be 80% full and still look full.
Yes.
So those tickets are sold and people just aren't bothering to even sell them because tickets for this game are going for $18.
Yeah. I had 3 or 4 different people hit me up the day before the game to be like, do you know anybody who would want to go to this game? And I didn't.
It was a real game.
I'm friends with a bunch of diehards, and they were all either like, I'm out of town or I'm not going to this game. No, thank you. I will watch from home. And that was before they saw the weather report.
Yeah. Well, the weather report was so bad that I think you need to move that game. Like, if they move that game up an hour and a half, they get it in time. And I know it's inconvenient for television, but no more inconvenient than having an actual rain delay.
I mean, they weren't able to finish showing the game on the television station that they began.
And then what if that's an actual game? Like, what if it's not Michigan pooping on
itself? It's really competitive.
Yeah, what if it's a field goal game and you're showing the rest of it on ESPN3? So I know it's bad for television, but it's bad for television either way. And then the fans get just screwed because, I mean, how many of those people are actually going to be around, even if it is, like, say, a three-point game?
Yeah, I mean, everybody was – I mean, you know, obviously circumstances kind of dictated that was the time to leave, but everybody left.
Yeah. I mean, especially because Morris throws an interception, and half the stadium is like, well, I'm leaving now, and then they call it. So that was an interesting contrast from Brady. Was it Brady's very first game?
His first game.
The monsoon, where I stayed in the stadium against Western. Against Western in a game that was, like, over. Yeah.
So done.
And there were like half the student section was still there. They were, you know, wet and yelling and having a good time. And that was not happening in this game. People were just like, I'm leaving. And then the only people in the stadium were the parents of the players and then the Utah fans when the people came back to it. It's just, I mean, the malaise around this program is absolutely unprecedented. So when we talk about the firing stuff, I mean,
that has to be factored in. And then Brandon has to be factored in.
How do you keep Dave Brandon, who is...
Marketing is supposed to be his jam, and he is actively driving people away.
And he made this hire, which looks to be a colossally bad hire.
Catastrophic.
And, well, not catastrophic, because he can
be... Well, he built a foundation.
He can be our Ron Zook, because he's actually got guys on the team, and he's kept guys around, so...
That's true, but he's just not the person who's...
But that's the best thing you can say about him at this point, is that he can be our Ron Zook, which is like, where's Ron Zook now? He's working at a bank, isn't he? Like, there's some picture of, like, Ron Zook in a suit, like, doing business development.
He couldn't even get a TV announcing gig?
You got to be able to speak English for that. Where's Tim Beckman going to go after this year?
If Ron Zook's working at a bank, I don't want to know where that puts Tim Beckman.
If I walk into a bank and I see Tim Beckman, I'm running.
If I walk into a gas station and I see Tim Beckman, I'm running.
At least we're not Illinois.
Or Iowa. I think we should put that in there, too.
Or Iowa. Oof.
That is the only one. Them and, like, the Illinois and Purdue's of the world are the one I can look at and be like, all right.
At least we're not them.
Yeah.
And we've got basketball, too, so that's good. And I think hockey will be good this year.
That's good.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to have some good things.
Hey, we can't. Basketball has
been terrific.
We can't
have all of the good things, and basketball has been amazing.
Just
so
amazingly terrific.
Yeah, I mean, I posted a GIF of John Beilein imagining.
Yeah, I retweeted that. Yeah.
It's that time now.
But yeah, I don't think you can allow Dave Brandon to make another hire. The problem is we have a new president who is he going to want to make that shift? Is he going to want to make waves like that? Because, you know, this isn't like he's going to go pursue opportunities. This is getting fired.
Yeah, although I mean, I'm more optimistic that it'll happen with Schlissel than if Mary Sue was still in there. I think having the regime change at the very top of the university allows you to kind of go, okay, this is how I want things to be run from now on.
Yeah,
let's change. Well, to, you know, follow whatever vision the president has.
We have a very strong indicator that the regents are not fans.
Yes.
And the other thing about the athletic director change is that, unlike coach, there's three or four obvious choices that Michigan is going to have.
I know you're a Jeff Long fan.
Well, I mean, Jeff Long is a possibility. I mean, but Ward Manuel at UConn is, I would say, probably the leading candidate.
Nailed the Kevin Ollie hire, that's for sure.
It was kind of handed to him, but I also...
He saw it through.
He did see it through, and I thought that, you know, they're... process for getting a new football coach was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't go to back to Pasqualoni or any retreads like that, like an idiot would. Whoever UConn's previous athletic director was, and they, you know, they went after Narduzzi. Narduzzi turned him down, which is like obvious.
And then it was probably smart by Narduzzi, but that's the type of guy you want to bring.
And then they actually got Diaco,
yes,
who had coordinated a defense that drove Notre Dame to the national championship game. And when he wasn't playing Navy, it looked like a really good idea. So whether that works out or not, I don't know, because UConn is not exactly in a hotbed of talent.
No, it's a tough football environment.
But the way that process worked, I thought, made a ton of sense.
Yeah. And I don't know, his fans don't actively hate him, which is a qualification that he gets above Dave Brandon at this point.
True. And he also hired a Turner Gill at Buffalo. So
another very strong hire.
Yeah. And he obviously flamed out very quickly at Kansas, but he made Buffalo into not the worst D1 team. So
yeah. And we've seen what Kansas has been able to do with footballing since then.
It's true.
It's been pretty poor.
Well, their choice after Turner Gill, maybe not so good.
Not the best.
So yeah, I would like to see everybody fired. Everybody.
Maybe keep Jeff Heklinski around.
Yeah, we could keep Heck and Manning.
Yeah, there's some position coaches I'd be okay with keeping around, but
yeah,
maybe even Nussmeier, to be honest. They give him a chance to actually put something together, but I just don't know how you keep the continuity with the staff while turning over everything else.
Well, yeah, and whoever comes in as the next coach,
they're obviously going to determine a lot of
right,
what they want the staff to be.
But having Manning around, I think, is probably a good idea.
That'd be nice. That would certainly keep some classes together.
Hopefully. And yeah, young, energetic recruiter, great guy, and then get in frickin' Wheatley or frickin' Hart for the other young, energetic recruiting guy.
Maybe we'll actually teach the running backs how to play running back.
Nah, probably not. Well, probably. I don't know. So this is where we are. Should we even talk about the game? I guess we should talk.
I think we have to.
All right.
We could do it quickly.
Well, we'll take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk about the game. It's Decoration Day. And I knew the hill boys would put him away. My daddy wasn't afraid. Said we'd fight till the last Lawson's last living day. Well, I never knew how it all got started. Problem with Holland before we were born. And I don't know the name of the boy we tied down. And we beat till he just couldn't walk anymore. But I know the... So I just wrote down Lowell what for the offense.
Is there anything else that needs to be said?
I don't know. We did get Norfleet killed in the last minute of a 2-score game.
Yep. After running play action on second down from their own 3, down 16 points.
Jesus
in
Christ.
A friggin' monsoon. And then Shane Morris has to run around like a chicken with his head cut off in the end zone to not get killed.
Yeah, I didn't watch any of the other bits. The bits that came after the stoppage. Because who cares? Honestly. Gardner was terrible.
This was
like the first one game where I was just like, he's dead. They killed him.
Yep.
I mean, even the interception that people were saying was Funches' fault was in front of him considerably. And he's got such a huge catching radius that to put it that
far closer on
him. I mean, to put it that far in front of him is a bad throw, even if you think that Funches can go get that ball.
Yeah, and it's hard to blame Funches for alligator arming one when Devin Gardner has actively tried to kill him like 3 or 4 times in the passes earlier in that game. I mean, it's remarkable he was still out there.
And there were a number of other throws to Funches that were just way behind him. So he was open for a pass that got Michigan down to the 10. He'd actually caught it, but because it was 3 feet behind him, the defensive back who was out of position was able to break it out.
It looks like Gardner's lost about half of his arm strength this year, and I don't know how that happened.
I mean, to me, it's about accuracy.
I mean, he also had balls where he stepped in and hit somebody on a little skinny post or something, and the ball, I mean, he kind of stepped into it, and the ball came out of his hands, and it just completely fluttered, and it was a little behind the receiver, and it got there, but it was really ugly, and that was one of the more accurate balls he threw. And then you've got the play where A.J. Williams was screamingly wide open on the right sideline with nobody within 20 yards of them, and then Gardner, like, lines up to heave it, and it ends up like 20 yards shorter to the other receiver and still underthrown.
Throw it to that. I don't know.
But either way, it was a bad underthrow.
Yeah.
Everything's being underthrown right now.
I just don't know.
His mechanics are
all over the place.
They're a mess.
I mean, there was the butt throw last week where he's just like kind of.
He ended up facing the wrong direction.
Well.
There are these weird jump throws. I don't know.
I feel horrible. He was just bad.
Yeah.
Feels like he's even gone backwards from where he was 2 years ago. And like, if Brady Hoke gets fired, that's going to be the story of his tenure here, where he has these two quarterbacks and they both go backwards over the course. Like he cannot make them better. He makes them worse. The offense he runs with them makes no goddamn sense.
And that's the thing is these are admittedly quarterbacks with some flaws, but just about every college football quarterback has a decent number of flaws, especially early on in their career. And what you do is you design an offense around that and get a system in where it makes sense. And seeing Devin Gardner line up under center every play practically. I mean, who thought that was a good idea?
And there were no quarterback runs in this game.
No. I mean, he scrambled, but that was on his own volition because he was trying to avoid death.
No designed quarterback runs.
Yeah.
Which is completely insane and is obviously on the head coach now and unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you have guys who aren't cutting it as pocket passers, but they can run faster than anybody else on the field, it is the epitome of coaching malpractice to not use that and make that, you know, the heart of your offense.
And I could understand it more last year when it was Devin Gardner and then a true freshman Shane Morris as the only options out there. But now that you've supposedly got Morris looking like something close to a starter, as I mean, that's what they're saying, what I'm saying.
Okay.
I mean, now that you've got something that's supposed to be viable as a backup.
As a backup, yeah.
And the guy who's going to have to start next year. So, I mean, if he does end up having to get thrown into the fire, then there's a benefit to it.
Who also has enough wheels to be credible.
Yes, he could run the zone. I mean,
in kind of a South Carolina quarterback fashion, but he could do it.
Yeah, he gets out and breaks some yards.
But this is against the philosophy of the head coach. So it just doesn't happen. It's never going to happen. And, you know, we're recruiting guys like Wilton Spate. No offense to Wilton Spate, but he's not
going to run ever.
And look at the guys around the country at successful programs like Ohio State. I mean, I know that they lost Braxton Miller, but that's just a freak event.
Yeah, it's unlucky. And looks like JT Barrett is going to eventually be quite good. He's just quite young.
I mean, hell, even Alabama's got a mobile quarterback this year. It's
that is really adding insult to injury.
Yeah. So, yeah. And then Morris came in and was absolutely not the answer. They threw awful interceptions. He apparently had a fumble. His first throw was just as bad as all of Gardner's throws to Funchess. It's like, maybe they don't understand the way motion works. I don't know. But he has not shown any capability of being the top guy. And I know people are like, let's go and just use him. And if Brady does do that, it's game over, man.
It's a total panic move. But at the same time, I mean, I thought it was a good idea to put Morris in that game because Gardner was just shambles.
After Gardner's last interception, it was just like, okay, well, now it's time to put in the other guy and see what happens without any expectation of success. And, of course, there was no success.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought the offensive line was also terrible. There were multiple incidents when I saw Braden hopelessly chasing a guy into the backfield. There was a sack that Gardner took where there was not one but two guys roaring in off the right.
Braden didn't touch either of them. And I had a pretty good view of that one.
And Gardner escaped from one of them, and then the other guy. So it's kind of felt a little bit like last year where Gardner was able to do something when he had one rusher, but there were too many times when multiple guys were coming in, and then you just get sacked. And maybe that contributed to the reversion. You know, the run game was pretty bad, and I haven't looked at the film yet. Oh, good. I get to do that. So I don't know how much of that was the line, how much of that was the tailbacks, and how much of it was Utah confusing Michigan with their scheme, although it didn't look like they were doing anything particularly amazing. But, you know, Michigan really strongly reverts to some pretty crappy ground game stuff. And it wasn't as bad as last year because they actually managed to get some yards, mostly when they were operating from the shotgun.
Yeah, a couple shotgun outside zones worked
well. They used the pin and pull a couple times effectively, and it was just like they had the one tendency-breaking run where they brought Norfleet in and they ran a counter to what they had been running with Norfleet before, which I liked. It seems so long ago, the first quarter when the sun was out, Michigan went down the field, got a field goal on their first drive. Seems like ages ago, eons. Ace is just doing the Stan from South Park thing now. He's gripping his nose in a way that's just, he's trying to keep his head in one piece. So that's where we are.
That's where we are.
All right, let's talk about the defense.
back down on train. Next station is Coneration Station. Wait there and let all the conjures get on board. I have a big crowd of Louisiana conjures down there. They got to go to hell on the Black Diamond train. They're always taking brick dust and brass pins and match heads, make little hands, sell them one another. But you got to go to hell on the Black Diamond train. Next station is Confusion Junction. Wait there and let all the confused makers get on. Some of you raise confusion in your home, confusion on the street, confusion in the church, confusion everywhere you go. But you got to go to hell on the Black Diamond train. Next station is Fightstown. Wait there and let all the church fighters get on board. I have a big crowd of church fighters down
there. So the defense, they give up, what, 12 net points? They give up 12 net points.
Yep.
Because the punt return is one of them. And then, they score 7 points of their own. And they give up under 300 yards again in a game in which Michigan gets blown out. So
they're the number one total defense in the Big Ten right
now. Ah, Big Ten!
They're giving up 261 yards a game, and Michigan is 2-2.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That is insane. The way that Utah picked up the yards that they did get, they had one screen in the first half that went for like 67 yards.
Can we talk about how fast Jordan Lewis is for a second? Dear God.
And Jordan Lewis was terrific. Like he would line up right over a guy and they would go at him, and then that guy would be in the sideline and Jordan Lewis would be trying to find the ball.
Mm-hmm.
So, a breakout game for him for all the good it did Michigan. And then even if you take out sacks, the Utah running game went for 3.3 yards a carry, which is great. That is a fantastic performance. And last year's Utah running offense was very good.
Yep.
They were in the top 20 nationally in yards per attempt, and Michigan basically choked them out. And then you added in a couple of really spectacular plays like Clark's leaping sack where he just went right over the guy trying to cut him.
You got Jake Ryan playing both men on his own read and tackling both of them.
Yeah, which he did at least twice and maybe three times. And then, of course, Willie Henry with the fat guy touchdown.
A wonderful, wonderful bright spot in an otherwise horrible day.
For all the good it did Michigan.
Yeah.
So this was a completely dominating performance. And the only kind of bad point was the drive at the beginning of the second half, where I think because I'm not sure yet, but I think it's Demonte Thomas getting completely lost on a mesh route.
Yeah. And I mean, my problem with that play was less Demonte Thomas having trouble with the mesh route and more that Michigan put Demonte Thomas in a position where he was supposed to guard Drez Anderson on a mesh route.
Well,
because that was probably never going to work out.
Well, Demonte is very athletic. He's just kind of still in that Marvin Robinson phase where you don't know if you can trust him to put him on the field. But
in that case, don't put him on the guy who led the Pac-12 in receiving average last year.
You don't have that option. They get to dictate the matchup as the offense. Because if you line up in one way and then they just put the guy in motion, you either have to do
switch your entire defense or –
So, and then in the context of this game, I'm not going to get down on Madison about that.
No, compared to everything else.
But, I think that the situation at safety is kind of crazy. Because, Wilson's out and – Hill goes out at one in this game. So you only have two scholarship safeties on the roster.
Yeah, A.J. Pearson is the next man in off the bench if anybody goes down.
How the hell do you construct your team such that that is the case where you literally have four safeties and that's it? And your fifth guy is either a walk-on or a true freshman cornerback who did nothing but play press man covers last year.
Seems like an oversight.
This just goes back to the quarterback thing. So Michigan, after Brady gets hired, they have two consecutive years where their quarterbacks are Russell Bellamy and nobody.
Yeah, and in both the case with the quarterbacks where Michigan certainly could have offered somebody and been able to bring in someone in that class. You have in last year's class, you have Monte Nicholson sitting there and Parker Westfall sitting there showing very strong interest in Michigan and Michigan backing off of those guys.
Yeah, and Westfall is definitely a safety type. And I know for a fact that he waited and then Michigan moved on from him.
Yes.
It was definitely not the other way around. So. Yeah, just the construction of the roster, sometimes it's like, what the hell are you even thinking? And having Demonte Thomas on the field is kind of part of that, and not having at least one or two more options. And I know, he's probably the fourth safety and injury is hurting Michigan. But and anyway, 286 yards. Again.
Phenomenal performance. But.
So
Ugh.
Here we are.
Mario Ojemudia had 2.5 tackles for loss. I'm now just looking down and seeing that. I'm like, hey, at least even the backup D linemen are having crazy good days.
He also did not cover a wheel route that went to the end zone, and then it was just kind of dropped by the Utah guy. But
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. But that's not his fault. That's just getting RPS'd. So, yeah, we've talked about the defense now.
we've finished talking about the – oh, wait, we have another section, don't we? Or are we just not going to talk about the punt return?
I thought we did. We did it at the beginning, like, mad section.
Okay, so we've covered
it. But we can talk about it again.
I mean, it was really stupid. Can we just reiterate how friggin' stupid it was? And then we went and, you know, they got another nice chunk punt return later in the game.
They did. They got about a chunk of 20, 30 yards on a punt that would otherwise have been at the 10. And then we're watching them with these rugby punts that are very hard to return. I think Norfleet fair caught one that was on the fly, 50 mm-hmm. yards. Fair catch, 50 yards on the fly. And they're going to ask Brady about it. And Brady's just going to be like, well, I'm not comfortable with this, and I don't want to talk about it.
He won't be.
This answering. Is not a good Brady Hoke impression. This is a terrible Brady Hoke impression. This is the worst.
Well, yeah, he probably won't be answering questions about punting 3 times from opponent territory in the first half either. But
yeah, well, it doesn't really matter because hopefully everybody gets fired. That's where we're at.
Yep.
Hooray. City's made of ashes. I'm gonna hit you on your face. I'm gonna punch you in your glasses. I'm wearing myself a t-shirt that says the world is my ashtray. Our hearts pump dust and our hair's all gray. And I just got a message that says, yeah, hell has frozen over. I got a phone call from the Lord saying, hey, boy, guess what? We welcome in Jamie Mack of Just Covered Blog for some reason. How you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well, guys. What if I told you a Big Ten team beat the reigning SEC East champs?
I would believe you. Wait, no, that's not right. I would not believe you.
No.
Did that happen?
Not believe me if I told you. You definitely wouldn't believe me if I told you it was actually Indiana beating Missouri.
Okay, now that makes a little bit more sense.
And also a lot less sense. Come on.
Indiana is a chaos team. Yeah.
They are a total chaos team. But still, beating Mizzou. That's
the best non-conference win of the Big Ten season, isn't
by
it?
By leaps and bounds.
They were ranked.
Edging out Michigan State under Oregon. I mean.
that was Indiana's first win on the road against a top 20 opponent since they beat Ohio State in October of 1987.
Did you say 1987?
1987.
I was not born.
I was a sophomore in high school, so I actually kind of remember that season. Earl Bruce, the Buckeye coach at the time, called it the darkest day in Ohio State history. So maybe yesterday was the darkest day of Missouri's football history.
Probably not.
I didn't catch any Jerry Finkel press conference, but
Missouri's seen some things. Like, they used to get blown out by Nebraska by 50 points every year. They've seen some things. That is one hardened fan base, I think. But yeah, so that was the only
same
game.
Old story for Indiana. You know, Tevin Coleman was awesome. Another touchdown for him. And Missouri snapped a 47-game streak where they'd gotten at least one turnover. That was pretty big for Indiana because they lost to BG last week, and they coughed it up a lot. They turned it over on downs a lot. So they sort of rolled, you know, a perfect turnover-free game. And they hung around. The defense had 12 tackles for loss. I couldn't believe it.
They also gave up 498 yards. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, that's good for them. Especially because
it was under 500.
Actually,
so, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably like below Indiana's 20-year yards per game average.
and they forced an interception, so they won the turnover battle and gave up fewer than 500 yards.
Yeah, and they go so fast that there's more possessions, so there's more yards to be gained. But anyway, so that happened.
It was a big win for them. It puts the bowl game back in contention for Wilson and Indiana. You know, they've got Purdue. You know, Maryland, Rutgers, Penn State, you know, those all appear winnable. The Michigan game suddenly appears winnable. Very winnable. Texas rounds out the out of conference.
Wait, Jamie, bowl and, game? What are you talking about a bowl game? You should be talking about winning the freaking conference.
Well, unfortunately, we're in the wrong division. I don't think they could match up with MSU or Ohio State, but if Indiana was in the West, I'd you know, go for it, you know? They could outscore all those teams in the West.
You got to be pining for last year's divisional alignment.
Yeah, Indiana and Purdue, even in this year's, and it's like, that could happen. But you have the best non-conference win of anybody in the Big Ten. You should be shooting.
Does that put one loss Indiana ahead of one loss Michigan State in the playoff pecking order?
Yes.
We need to debate the
Big Ten. Oh my God.
Well, what do you guys think of Kevin Wilson for Michigan?
I'd be okay with that. It might not be the best hire that they can make, but at least for the entertaining offense, it would be fun.
I mean, I don't see it. It seems like impossible to judge whether he can ever actually put a defense together. That offense can go. But I mean, Indiana's defense
is bad. It'd be nice to have Greg Frey back on the sideline now.
Not sure if serious.
I think he's a good offensive line coach. I mean, he's done great things for IU. They're putting guys in the pros, and they just open up holes all the time.
Yeah, I don't know if that would be welcome by Michigan.
That's just tomfoolery. You know, when I say that, but I mean, he's getting it done down there. I mean, it's just impressive. You know, I mean, it's impressive what they've done on offense. It's really not that gimmicky. You know, I mean, at times Indiana has had great offenses, but it just felt so gimmicky. But, you know, pretty much now two seasons here, it's really felt like it's been a really good offense. And just hopefully they can find a way to play defense like that three or four more times this year and get into a bowl game.
Jamie, stop saying the word bowl game. Start saying the word Indianapolis. You just need to beat State. You can beat State. This is going to become an Indiana football podcast pretty soon.
It's getting close. Indiana football and Michigan basketball. We're going to do the bizarro Jamie match.
The inversion Jamie, yeah.
Right.
All right, so I guess other things happened in the league. Was there anything that I should care about? Like, I don't care about anything, but other than that.
Well, Nebraska picked up a big win last night over Miami. Amir Abdullah again was awesome, and you know they have some interesting games coming up. They go to State on the 4th, and they play Wisconsin in November. And I'm wondering what you guys think about these lines. These were the point spreads in those games before the weekend. Michigan State was favored by 10, and Wisconsin was favored by 11 over Nebraska. I know they're so flawed on defense, but I just love that offense so much. Maybe I like that matchup against Wisconsin a lot more than Michigan State. They're both on the road, but I just love that Nebraska offense so much. And I've watched them, you know, the last 2 weeks, and they're fun.
Yeah, they managed to get it done without a quarterback who can really throw the ball that well, which is something Michigan could use, maybe.
I thought Armstrong ran well, though, yesterday. I mean, he got popped once and fumbled, and he threw a really – really awful pick at one point that kind of kept Miami in the game. But I mean, I thought he complimented Abdullah on that option really well. 98 yards, and I think he stuck himself in there a few times. I mean, he's really physical. He only threw 13 times, though, yesterday.
Well, that's kind of how you want to do it if you're Nebraska.
Yeah.
Because he was 9 for 13 and averaged 8.7 yards an attempt.
I mean,
but if not for the interception, that's the perfect game you want out of Tommy Armstrong Jr.
But they're making it work with a guy who can't really throw the ball that much. And if they ever get like a real A-level talent in there, that offense is going to be quite good. And given the things they've been able to do with Taylor Martinez and Tommy Armstrong now, it's like, you know, that's a good structure for your offense.
Well, do you see him hanging in either of those two games? I mean, that's, to me, it seems like they should win all the rest of their other games, but those two, and they're still looking like significant underdogs in those games, at least from the most recent odds.
I don't know. I see Michigan State like just choking those guys off because they don't have enough talent to deal with Michigan State's defense in the way that an Oregon did. But like Wisconsin, yeah, they can hang in with Wisconsin. They can beat Wisconsin. Like Wisconsin,
he might have the better throwing quarterback than Wisconsin.
I mean, when Wisconsin comes up against a team that can put them in 3rd and 5, 3rd and 6, are they going to move the ball consistently? I don't know. I kind of doubt it.
Mm-hmm. And Melvin Gordon versus Abdullah is kind of a wash, I think. I mean, they're both pretty phenomenal.
Yeah, they're both pretty good. Although Melvin Gordon is obviously much better because I drafted him.
I'm not going to defend my draft to start team at this point. It's so far from my mind.
All right, so that was interesting.
Wisconsin yesterday hammered Bowling Green. They had 3 100-yard rushers, and a fourth had 94 yards.
That is impressive.
Yeah, that's your Wisconsin update, by the way.
Yeah, 644 yards on the ground at 10.7 yards per carry for Wisconsin against Bowling Green. That is impressive.
I feel like we're talking about programs, you know? I feel like Nebraska is a program. I feel like Wisconsin is a program. I don't feel like Michigan is a program.
Yeah, you don't get to say like Michigan did X stat and you go, oh, well, that's Michigan. It's like Michigan turned the ball over 3 times hilariously. And then you're like, well, yeah.
Or they got tackled for loss 85 times.
Yes. But there's not like a hang your hat thing.
It's becoming more and more like Michigan.
Second and 12th play action. That's so Michigan.
Yeah.
So we can hang our hat on that. Wonderful.
Something else.
You know what's interesting? You know what I thought was interesting yesterday about the Big Ten, thinking about it? We were bagging Maryland and Rutgers, you know, this whole offseason. None of us really want them in the league. But they've actually had both of those teams have had an interesting first month of the season, and they both played several interesting games. And
they're both 3-1.
I don't know where I sit with that, you know, because it's just like, are you kidding me? Like, we're pining for storylines in the Big Ten, and we're like, hey, Rutgers and Maryland, they've been playing some interesting games.
Yep. Let's move on to some other game.
They both look better than Michigan, unfortunately.
Yeah, we know.
I don't think we need to talk about Michigan State beating Eastern Michigan while giving up 1 yard of offense in the first half.
We should talk about the picture of Rob Bolden getting suplexed.
Can we also talk about the Eastern Michigan center snapping it to himself? I don't know if you saw that.
I did not see that.
He tried to snap the ball, and he didn't really do it successfully, and he just sort of picked the ball up and then stood there and turned backwards and looked to the quarterback in terror for a second and then got hit by, like, 4 people. It was the most Eastern Michigan play of all time.
Big Ten.
Between that and their that little wall fiasco they had a couple of weeks ago when they were trying to break that wall down on their way out on the field, they've had an interesting month, too, over there.
They're trying to just break the Sports Center, not top 10.
You got to build somewhere.
Why aren't they an FCS team? Like,
they should be a Division II team.
They should be a Division II team. But they're not.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I don't know all the rules, but I think most of the MAC schools don't even meet that attendance requirement.
No, there's no way. But they fake it.
No. And I mean, I'm kind of with you. I always thought it'd be kind of more interesting for football if, like, the MAC was FCS and, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 of their teams could make the playoff down there. I think that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. Like,
yeah.
Hey, Central's in the playoff. Let's watch the playoff. But they're not because they have delusions of grandeur.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Everybody wants. They'd rather play in the GMAC Bowl.
How'd Purdue do? Let's talk about Purdue.
Let's see.
Purdue beat
Southern Illinois 35-13.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So Southern Illinois' coach must be in some trouble. All right, let's stop talking about Purdue.
There you go.
We can talk about, I guess we should also congratulate another team beating a directional Illinois school, Northwestern over Western Illinois 24-7. We no longer need to talk about this game, but there's the score.
All right. Let's stop talking about Northwestern.
Iowa, I did say how I was glad we are not Iowa, but they did manage to beat Pitt.
That's true. They beat Pitt, but they can't fire their coach.
And they're now 3-1, but Kirk Ferentz is still under contract until 2020. So,
and the buyout is 75% of his contract, which is like...
So that sucks.
We should definitely find his agent, and you mispronounced Ferentz again.
I did.
You're always going to do that.
Yeah, that's my Lewin.
Yeah, well, I fixed it, I think.
After he graduated. But I will note that Pitt outgained Iowa 435-311, and the turnover battle was even, so it seems like there was some weird stuff going on that let Iowa win that.
Yeah, they –
Iowa.
Go ahead.
I was going to say Iowa changed their quarterback, so at halftime they went with Bethard.
Apparently because
of a long bomb that was caught by like one – you know, the guy caught it by – with one arm, just kind of almost like a lucky catch, and that turned the whole second half around, that one play.
Yeah, and then the first half they went deep, and Rudock actually put it right on his wide receiver, who managed to, like, toss it to a safety. It was the most bizarre thing. Like, he was trying to catch it, and he kind of was slipping through his fingers, so he managed to just put it right in the chest of a guy about 3 yards behind him.
Mm.
And it was like, the announcer had no idea what was going on. I had no idea what was going on. I was like, why is that man running with the ball? It was just insane, Yeah, it was very Big Ten. It was very Iowa. So here we go. Penn State. Let's talk about Penn State. What they do?
Penn State. They beat UMass 48-7. Yeah. So basically a bye.
What about Ohio State?
Ohio State. What did they do?
If you can't tell, listeners.
Ohio State did not play anybody, and they play Cincinnati and Gunnar Kiel next Saturday night.
That might be interesting if I was interested in anything except basketball.
Yeah.
However,
I don't.
They've been giving up big pass plays for a couple seasons at Ohio State. Kiel, he'll sling it. It could be interesting.
So I think we covered everything except Illinois beating Texas State by 7, which we're done. and our next week's opponent, Minnesota, beat San Jose State 24-7.
They also beat them with 7 passing yards.
On one completion. And they had one interception. So they completed 2 passes and half of them were to the other team. That's what happens when you get to Minnesota's backup quarterback, apparently.
And we might.
Yeah, Leitner didn't play. Streveler went the whole distance.
But here's the thing with Streveler is he ran the ball 18 times for 161 yards.
Yeah.
And David Cobb had 207 on 34 carries. So Minnesota managed to pound San Jose State in the face despite not throwing the ball at all.
That is going to be an interesting game next week, isn't it?
Or just horrifying to watch in every way imaginable.
That's another way to put it. That's probably a more accurate way to put it.
But if you're the morbidly curious type, next week is going to be for you.
That's the only kind of curiosity I have left.
Michigan was favored by 12 in this game over the summer.
Oh, no.
They never re-released a line on this game once the season started, but they were
my
favorites in the summer. Yeah, I think so, too.
Because I don't think anyone's confident that Michigan will score 12 points, let alone put that type of gap between them and another team.
Well, Willie Henry might.
Yeah. we can hold out hope for Willie Henry getting 2 pick ribs this game. Or just lifting up the quarterback and carrying him to the end zone and placing him there and then just taking the ball from him.
All right, Jamie, where are you at on Hoke and Brandon here?
I'm not with them. I mean, it just looks like a disaster.
Because it was.
Yeah, it is a disaster. I've always said that I don't have the answer as far as who the coach should be, but I know the three of us watch enough football, and we see a lot of just fun coaches, good coaches of all sorts of styles. And I just wonder why Michigan can only play one way. We seem to be the only program that has to do something a certain way, and it's just not working. I mean, it's just yesterday you knew they weren't coming back when they got it the 20-10 when they rolled that touchdown to start the third quarter. You're like, they're not going to be able to put 2 scores up, and that's just terribly frustrating.
Yeah, we talked about it before. We were both like, I mean, there are ways that Michigan can come out of the season and hope to keep his job. If they go 9-3, and that's what I was expecting before the season, and the Big Ten looks so bad that that's still vaguely possible.
Yeah.
But they're going to have to play so much better than they have so far. And, you know, Hoke has never been able to do that to it with a team, you know, like – Lloyd Carr had a knack for like getting people figured out and fixing them and going on and having an actual season. And even when he didn't, like in 2005, they were at least close. Like they weren't a good team. They deserved to be 7-5, but you know, when they lost a game, they lost it by 3 points instead of 16 or 31. So, yeah.
Well, and, you know, and the thing is, you know, they haven't shown the ability to turn a season around. You know, right now they're in this rut where they can't face any adversity in a single football game without it going downhill. And that was indicative of a lot of the collapses under Rodriguez. And, you know, I think we're heading into the second straight year here where it's going on, you know, with Hoke. I mean, you know, yesterday, you know, the game I thought went well at the start. And, you know, at one point it was like 77 to minus 13 rushing yards. I thought Derek Green was heading for 100 yards. And they milk out a win. And then all of a sudden a couple plays went against them. And even with the Willie Henry interception, you know, they couldn't even capitalize on that. But when things just start going awry, they can't seem, ever since they lost that Penn State game, they can't seem to control it.
Yeah, and I mean, it just, the kind of mistakes that Michigan's making are indicative of a team that is extremely poorly coached. Like, your stupid punt formation and then only having 10 guys on your stupid punt formation, huddling with 10 minutes left. You left before this happened, I think.
Running play action from the shadow of your own end zone on the last gas drive.
In games that are over. So, yeah, I'm pretty much done. Yep.
Do you think they're changing quarterbacks at all?
I don't care.
I don't really.
I mean, it's deck chairs on the
Titanic. I don't care either, to be honest with you. I'm just wondering if you guys had any insight on that.
I don't have any insight. I mean, obviously Shane Morris did not look like the answer.
And no, exactly. I think that's one reason why the whole discussion leading into this week about it was just so silly, you know, because there's just no evidence there that's even going to be an upgrade. The only reason why it even sounds appealing is just to build for the future. But I mean, it's looking like we're changing coaches. So what future are we building if we make a change like that?
Well, yeah, and Hoke isn't going to be thinking about anything except the next game because each one may be his last. But yeah, I mean, I'm hoping we see a change of athletic director now so that we can prepare. We have enough time to prepare for a coaching search because I think that is probably the most likely outcome. It's just tough because
I can't believe they made those kids play that game out at the end. That might sound wimpy of me, but.
Well, I understand why because Utah is like, you know, we're going to win this game. So we're going to go out there. And Michigan has to make it look like they're trying without actually trying. That's what they did.
The other option was forfeit, and that would not have been received well.
That's what they did in the Notre Dame game, where they, you know, they've got Funchess out there with 5 minutes left, but in the middle of the third quarter, they're not running any tempo. So,
yeah.
I mean, they're not trying to win, but they're trying to make it look like, oh, we're trying to win. And that's pathetic. But that's what Michigan football is right now. For a guy who talks about toughness so much, this is the least tough group of people. I don't want to, you know, I'm not bagging on the players. I'm bagging on the coach. But we're just repeating ourselves now, Jamie. So I think we are done for.
Do you guys have any, like, I hate these terms sometimes, but, you know, do you guys have any, like, dream candidates? If you could just, you know, wave a magic wand and put somebody there or.
Wave a magic wand? I can get a lot of people with a magic wand. I can get Gus Malzahn with a magic wand.
Yeah, at that point, it's Gus Malzahn and that end of discussion.
But I don't have a magic wand. So in terms of realistic candidates, I don't really see anyone. I mean, Ruffin McNeil is running a good program at Eastern Carolina, but.
He's an Eastern Carolina grad. They hired him because he would stick there.
And he's 55, so kind of low upside there. And there's not really anybody out there who appeals. I mean, when I think about these things, I start thinking about offensive coordinators. Like Chad Morris, Scott Frost, guys like that. Lane Kiffin. It sounds good now, doesn't it? It sounds good.
Somebody's offense has been upgraded with Lane Kiffin.
I think I killed Ace. I think he's.
I can't.
You'd take Lane Kiffin over what we've got right now.
I would.
You would.
And that's fucking crazy.
All right, we got an Ace F-bomb. Here we go. We have truly podcasted like gentlemen.
fuck.
Well, Ace is allowed to be a little salty today. How long did you stay in the press box last night?
I was there until, I don't know, 8:30-ish. I've managed to time it perfectly so that I would get back to my apartment just in time for the game to restart.
Somehow I made it home to Toledo before you left the press box.
Well, everybody else was staying because they had to. And I didn't think about it. Otherwise, when I left the game, I would have told Ace and added.
The bigger problem was I was parked 20 minutes away from the stadium, and walking in that was not really an option. Right. So I had a very merciful friend come and scoop me from the Chrysler parking lot, because otherwise that was going to be miserable. But yeah, everybody else hated us because we got to leave, so that was fun. I think Dooley bolted like the moment the weather delay was announced, which props to that dude. He knows the drill.
Well, also, he's not working for anyone.
Yeah, he played it better than anybody yesterday.
Yep.
I liked how the network found a way to sneak in a couple TV timeouts when we knew this impending weather was coming. I thought that was a brilliant touch.
Yeah, we also talked about how, you know, when you know that this weather is coming in, that you should have moved the game up an hour. Like,
yeah,
I mean,
even a half hour would have been able to get that in probably.
Yeah, but just to be safe, just because if you can avoid a weather delay, that is so much better for all the fans. And, you know, you kind of knew by the night before when you could have moved it. And that's what I think they should have done. But I don't really care about anything, so I don't care. All right. I think we've covered
it. Should have moved it like somewhere else. You know, we all would have probably enjoyed our day better.
They fight on the moon. All right, Jamie, we're gonna end this now because it's our life is pointless and nothing has
meaning. I get it. It's a rough subject to talk about, you know.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll talk to you next week, Jamie. Probably.
You got it, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the Invo Podcast. I am Ace Amender, along with Brian Cook. I just got tagged in a tweet that said there were three great tweets for Sunday, and one of the other tweets was from Mike Valenti, so I'm just going to stop now and maybe jump off a bridge.